Thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is presented by preaching minister Josh Yeager. Let's tune in now for Josh's message.
So last week, we started our deacon selection process. And there's, like Shane said, you have one more week to turn in your forms. And I would just encourage you during this week, if you haven't had the chance yet, to talk to some people. If you want to put them down and talk to them, affirm to them that you are thinking about them, and encourage them just by telling them that, hey, I'm thinking about you as a servant. But just find out. Just talk to them if they're willing to serve. And I just hope that you, that during this last week, we can really just finalize our list as we try to decide who should be serving in this role. And so after that, then the process is going to continue with those people who have received at least 15 nominations. By the way, the current deacons don't need to be nominated, if I understand correctly. Is that right, Don? Where are you, Don? Ready? Put your hand up. Am I getting that right? He's not here. That's correct. Okay. And then the interviews will conclude on April 8th. The elders will then present a list of those men who have agreed to serve, after which we will all as a congregation have the opportunity to discuss any questions or concerns with those individuals. And then on April 15th, we will have an affirmation vote where the congregation will affirm those deacons. They will need to receive a 60% of affirmation. We were originally going to install those deacons on the 22nd, but there were no women in on that decision, and they reminded all of us that, hey, we're going to be gone on our women's retreat that day, so we won't be installing them on the 22nd. I'm not sure when we'll do it, but it'll probably be the week after when it is most convenient to do it. So that's kind of the process, and I just hope that everybody who's a member here at 10th and Broad will take part in the process. So last week, we talked about deacon. We mentioned that it was that the very word means servant or minister. And we looked at the book of Acts, and we looked at what I consider to be the precursors of the deacon role, even though they weren't called deacons in Acts. And we saw that those men in Acts chapter 6 who were chosen to look after the distribution of food in Acts chapter 6, they were chosen to free up the apostles to minister through the word and through prayer. They were chosen by believers there in the Jerusalem church. They were chosen because they were respected and full of the Spirit and wisdom. And then we looked at 1 Timothy chapter 3, and we looked at the qualities that Paul lays out for the deacons. And he says they should be men of respect and integrity. They should not be heavy drinkers. They should not be dishonest with money. They should be committed to the mystery of the faith. In other words, they should be committed to the deep truths of Christianity. In other words, Jesus came, he died, he was raised, and belief in his resurrection and his life is what gives us life. Those are the deep mysteries of the faith that Paul is talking about. They should be tested. In other words, they should go through a process, much like what we are going through now. Their wives should be respected as well. They should not be slanderers. They should exercise self-control and faithfulness. It doesn't mean they should be perfect. None of this, you know, if it means everybody has to be perfect, we're not going to pick anybody, okay? But their wives should also be respected, and because this is a team effort. You know, this is we're choosing a team here. He should be faithful to his wife, and he should be a good manager of his household. So today, I just want to paint a picture of the leadership based on one other passage of Scripture. And my hope is that this will be kind of spill over into everybody. This isn't just about deacons. This is about everybody who exercises leadership in the church, whether you are a greeter at the front door, whether you are a Bible class teacher, whether you are a small group leader, whether you are, just fill in the blank. There's all kinds of ways that you are leading. Any type of service is a type of leadership in the body. And so my hope is that these words this morning will spill over into all of those things. as we continue to serve in the church. And I hope that this will especially challenge me, the other ministers, the elders, and those who are considering to be put into the office of deacon. So as I think about what it means to lead, I have this tendency to be an answer man, and many of you know this about me. I try to exercise leadership through logic and study and my persuasive personality, okay? It's just the way I go. That's the way I am. I try to get people to bend to my will because I believe that my will is best. And I would imagine that most of us are like this. We think that our will is best. But that's not what leadership in the church looks like. In Mark chapter 10, verse 32, we see the third and final prediction that Jesus makes, where he talks about his suffering and his death. He makes three predictions in Mark. And the picture that Mark gives us is really powerful in Mark chapter 10. He says, he is leading the way to Jerusalem. He's on his way to Jerusalem. And there seems to be a big group of people following him. And I understand that because he was doing all kinds of miracles. He was teaching incredible things. And he looks around and he sees this big group of people that are following him. And he says, I need to talk to my 12 guys. And so he pulls them off to the side. And Mark depicts the disciples, these apostles, as very dense. I don't think the other gospel authors are quite as hard on the disciples as Mark is. Mark is really hard on them. Like, they just seem like, you know, dumb heads. I mean, you know, how are you even following Jesus? Why are you even following him sometimes? And he pulls these 12 guys aside. He says, we're heading to Jerusalem. I'm going to be betrayed. I'm going to be sentenced to death. I'm going to be handed over to the Romans. They will mock me. They will spit on me. They will flog me. They will whip me. And ultimately, I'm going to die. And then I will be raised. And then we see two of his apostles after this incredible statement. It's the third time he said this. We see two of his apostles coming to him as if he had not just said all that stuff. And they're looking for positions of great leadership. Mark chapter 10, starting verse 35. Then James and John, sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do us a favor. What's your request? Jesus asked. They replied, when you sit on your glorious throne, we want to sit in places of honor next to you. One on your right and the other on your left. It's like, okay, did you just miss what Jesus said? Did you just miss it? It's like walking into a fast food restaurant and seeing all the things on the menu and saying, hey, you know, if you're me, I want your jalapeno pepper jack burger. That's like my favorite burger. I want that jalapeno pepper jack burger. Give me the jalapeno pepper jack, please. And they said, sorry, we're out of that. I'm like, well, how about a bacon cheeseburger? Because that's my second choice. And they're like, well, we're out of that. Well, how about just a cheeseburger? Well, we're out of that. Well, what do you have? Well, we have this earthworm burger. Okay, I'll take that. You know, it's like, did you just hear what they said is available? I mean, did these guys just hear what Jesus said was going to happen? And they're like, yeah, I want some of that. But his coronation, it doesn't mean a party. His coronation doesn't mean food and drink to go around for everyone. It doesn't mean ease and comfort. Jesus' coronation is torture. And his crown is death. And Mark holds the obtuseness of these 12 disciples, or especially these two, up for everybody to see. And often we're tempted to say, man, how ridiculous are they? How ridiculous are James and John? And whenever I say that, when I'm reading scripture, I always realize I'm that guy in the story. I am that guy in the story. Don't we often want the same thing out of our Christianity at times? We want to be the best church in town that everybody comes to, that fills up all the pews and is overflowing with numbers. We want our efforts to result in filled pews and money so that we can do whatever we want to do. We want our discipleship to result in influence and power. But I think that if that's what we are asking for, Jesus would respond to us the very same way he would respond to these disciples. Verse 38. You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of suffering I'm about to drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism of suffering I must be baptized with? Oh, yes, they replied, we are able. I'm like, oh, man, Wurmberger, what are you doing? Did you just hear what he said? I honestly don't think they're hearing correctly, and sometimes I don't think we hear correctly. They think that sharing his cup and baptism is a means in sharing in his glory, and so they say, oh, yes, that's us. We can go along with that to receive glory, but Jesus sets them straight. Says, yes, you will join in, but it's not going to result in what you're looking for. Keep reading. You will indeed, Jesus says, you will indeed drink from my bitter cup and be baptized with my baptism of suffering. But I have no right to say who will sit on my right or my left. God has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen. In other words, your leadership and your power will be what God determines it to be. It's not up to you. And what's amazing is for Jesus, it's not even up to him. I mean, this is one of those really difficult places where it's like, okay, Jesus is God. He has all the power and he's fully God, but he's fully human. He has no limitations, but he has limitations at the same time. And it's just so hard to wrap our mind around this. But Jesus says, it's not up to me. It's up to what God determines for you. So then the other disciples hear. And by the way, if you're following along up there, I'm going to go out of order here. So the other disciples hear what's going on with James and John. So let's go to verse 41 and I'll come back to that other stuff. When the ten other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. I'm going to stop there. So why were they indignant? I know why I would be indignant. I would be indignant because I didn't think of that before they did. I would want to ask them for, you know, why didn't I think to ask Jesus for his right side and his left side? You know, I would be indignant because I would be like, well, if they're going to get it, I want it. You know, can't we just all like squish into one throne on the side? You know, that's why I would be indignant. And that's probably why most of us would be indignant. And what I love about this moment is that Jesus doesn't reject his disciples. I mean, that's good news, isn't it? He doesn't reject his disciples. Doesn't reject his disciples. Look at what he says. Verse 42. So Jesus called them together and said, come on. Listen to this. You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Wow. It's good news. My question for all of us this morning is, do we live like Jesus in this area? It's really easy for us to reject people. But Jesus doesn't take their misunderstanding, doesn't take their bumbling words and toss them out and say, stay outside of Jerusalem. He just says, come on, let me show you. Let me show you what it's like for you. And this is honestly one of those passages that it's just puzzling to me because of my humanity. You know, because I read passages like Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. It's one of my favorite passages where Jesus says, you're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And you are the light of the world, a city on the hill. It can't be hidden. Neither do you light a torch and put it under a bowl, but let your light shine before others so that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. That's Jesus said that, and we immediately think, okay, if I'm going to be that salt, if I'm going to be that light, I'm going to have power. I'm going to change the culture. I'm going to have power, because we immediately think that if we're going to change the culture, we have to have power. And that's what Christianity, that's what the church, that's what we're all about, is we're about the work of transforming culture. And so we think we have to have power to do that. But Jesus says, no, you become like a slave. You become like a servant. You transform it by humble service. Did James and John ever get it? You ever wondered that? Did James and John ever get it? Well, I don't know about James, because we don't have any writings from him. We have James, the brother of Jesus, who wrote the letter of James, but we don't have writings from this James. But we do have writings from John. And in his first letter, not his gospel, but his letter, listen to these words, because I think it shows us that John got it. 1 John 3:16. We know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. Same guy who's asking to sit on Jesus' right hand. So we also ought to give up our lives for our brothers and sisters. Let's skip to chapter 4, verse 11. Dear friends, since God loved us that much, we surely ought to love each other. Wow. He got it. So as we consider the office of deacon, servant, a leader in the church, let's also consider that we are called to be transformed into the image of Jesus, a suffering, selfless, servant Messiah. And that is how we will truly overcome the world.